This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
National level. Your involvement will make a difference. The nomination period is now open and closes on September 25th. Visit kpft.org for nomination procedure. This announcement is brought to you by our Committee of Inclusion at KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
And from the roasting oven that is the Montrose, it is Deborah and
Jennifer.
And Jennifer and Glenn. But there's no Jack, and there's no a couple of other people, so it's the three curmudgeons, except in what's the female version of curmudgeon?
You always say crone.
Crone, okay, so it's the...
But I am not a curmudgeon. I'm working my way to be a curmudgeon.
Yes. Did you wear your flag jacket tonight?
No, I didn't, but I'm wearing my my special good luck t-shirt. How's that?
Okay. That's good.
Well, of course, what Glenn is referring to is that there was an incident around 1 a.m. Monday morning where a bullet was shot into the KPFT studios. It's been on the news and it's going to be in the paper. And thank goodness no one was hurt. But it is a scary thing, and there's no really reason to believe that it was someone specifically targeting KPFT, but it could have been. So it also always brings to mind the times we live in, the dangers of, you know, as you go about your daily life.
Do you think it was just someone walking down the street, just pulled out their gun?
It was a car. It was a drive-by. But, you know, other than that,
Do you think they were smart enough to drive?
When we find out more, we will let folks know about it. We want to thank you for joining
Jennifer Renee
and Deborah Bell and Glenn Holt in the studio tonight for the August 13th, 2007 edition of Queer Voices. As Glenn mentioned, it is stifling hot. There is a weather advisory, heat alert out, severe weather conditions, which means keep hydrated, keep nourished. A lot of people think if they just drink water, they're okay, but your body needs minerals and things as well. So make sure you have some kind of nutrition along with keeping hydrated. And the best way to hydrate is with water and a little bit of lemon in it.
Yes. Oh, very tasteful. Like what you
just
have this evening?
Just regular Houston tap
wonderful.
Water. And
oh, that is dangerous. Just regular tap water.
No, actually.
You are taking your life in your own hands, aren't you?
I prefer to get it filtered in some kind of, you know, reverse osmosis thing. Oh. But City of Houston water is really good stuff.
Oh. Well, I wonder why it always looks like coffee at my place. Right out of the tap.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, move. No. On tonight's program, we're going to have Christopher Johnson, who is the Director of Public Affairs for the Human Rights Campaign, HRC, and he's going to be talking with Jennifer Renee about the recent presidential candidate forum on GLBT matters that was on the Logo Channel.
Last Thursday night, I'm sure all of you were watching, and those of you who weren't watching, you still can hear the candidates and their responses by going to logoonline.com. Excuse me.
Now, did you get to watch it?
I didn't get to watch it live, but what I did when I got home, I was able to immediately go to Logo Online and watch them, and they had it separated out. It was terrific. It was actually nice to watch it on the playback, on the archives.
Uh-huh. I have not had an opportunity to see it either, so that will be interesting to hear what...
I was pleased and disappointed.
Yeah, there are things to be pleased about and things to be disappointed about. And then we'll have our political pundit, Jeff Reed, on the political beat, and he's going to be talking with me about the resignation of Karl Rove, the big news story of today.
Now, I've heard that name before.
I, I think there's something, you know, he's leaving for a reason. And
he's probably to help the Republicans save their, you know what?
Hopefully they're...
A piece of meat being thrown to the wolves?
Something like that. If Karl Rove is leaving, I mean, it's the rat leaving the ship. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, it's like the captain leaving the ship.
Well,
we know
the ship has sailed.
We know who the Joker's in charge.
Right. And Jeff's also going to talk about the Iowa straw poll results and about Rick Noriega's candidacy for a Senate seat, the position currently held by John Cornyn. And then I'm going to talk a little bit at the event both Jennifer and I were at on Saturday mm-hmm. with future President Hillary Clinton in town and some of the things that she had to share with us. And then in the second hour, we'll have This Way Out and my wonderful friend Christy Claxton will talk about her work as a singer, songwriter, performer, and her upcoming Houston House concert. So stay tuned for that and more on Queer Voices. And now to News Wrap from This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Don Lupo.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 11th, 2007. A crowd of up to 500,000 people greeted a rainbow flotilla as it sailed through Amsterdam's historic canals on August 4th in the Dutch city's annual LGBT Pride Festival. Throngs lined the canals to watch boats packed with well-muscled men in leather thongs, cowboy hats, and disco glitter, dancing lesbians wearing bikinis and fairy wings, and lesbian Elvis impersonators with pink hair, all competing for the most outrageous prize. For the first time, a designated hetero boat was among the more than 70 official parade entries, with hundreds of other smaller vessels cruising along. A rash of gay-bashing assaults in Amsterdam this year cast a shadow over the proceedings, however, in a city known for its tolerance. Police spokesman Gerard Roeland told the Associated Press that there had been 16 gay-bashing attacks in Amsterdam so far this year, compared with 10 all of last year. He said the jump in numbers might be a result of police efforts to encourage victims to come forward. But Tin Elferink, a spokesman for the country's national queer organization, COC, noted that social acceptance of homosexuality is not complete. Gay people still can be beaten up, just like that, for holding hands or being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
According to initial reports, the fourth annual Pride March in Estonia's capital of Tallinn was peaceful on August 11th, despite a countermarch by opponents. Participant Sophie Intveld, a member of the European Parliament, told Deutsche Presseagentur that the parade is a litmus test on how serious we are about human rights in a united Europe. About 300 people gathered under sunny skies in the streets of the Eastern European city, clapping and cheering as they made their way along the planned route, protected by private security and extra police officers. Thousands of locals and tourists watched. Halfway down the route, an alternative procession formed with a dozen mostly Russian-speaking men, women, and children chanting "No Pride" as they followed the parade, separated by just one security officer. Several skinheads later joined them, but there were no reports of violence. About two dozen skinheads assaulted several marchers at last year's Pride parade, leaving at least one man with head wounds.
Rainbow flags and water balloons mixed with banners demanding global equality on August 5th at the 29th annual Vancouver Pride Parade. An estimated 385,000 people watched the spectacle along the Canadian city's densely populated West End, standing 15 to 25 deep in some places, according to organizers. Crowd favorites included dykes on bikes, with women in leather, tutus and bikini tops gunning their engines, Vancouver's lesbian and gay square dance club performing to a countrified version of Gloria Gaynor's club anthem "I Will Survive," and a choreographed dance routine by the Vancouver Men's Chorus. The march took on an international flavor with Grand Marshal Tomasz Bukowski, one of the organizers of Warsaw Pride. They'd taken the Polish government to the European Court of Human Rights to win the right to hold their first Pride march on May 19th this year.
But the crackdown on LGBT Pride in Singapore continued this week, with the government refusing to allow a picnic in a park. Police revoked a permit to hold the gathering and 5K fun run in the Botanic Gardens in central Singapore because, they said, political activity was not permitted in green spaces. Alex Au of the organizing group People Like Us told the Associated Press that it was never meant to be political, and this testifies to the paranoia of the government. They automatically assume that anything gay is a political challenge to them. It speaks volumes about the political climate in Singapore. The picnic ban is the latest event canceled by the government during a week of Pride events planned by People Like Us. Censors refused to allow an LGBT book reading and a forum on human rights in Asia featuring a distinguished Canadian law professor. A photo exhibit of fully clothed gay and lesbian couples kissing was also closed by police hours before its official opening. Under Singapore law, gross indecency between two men can lead to 2 years in jail. There have been growing calls in the tightly controlled nation for modernization of its sex laws. Singapore's government announced plans late last year to decriminalize oral and anal sex between adult heterosexuals, but homosexual sex would remain outlawed.
There was more bad news for gays and lesbians in other parts of the world this week. 18 men in Nigeria face execution after being found guilty of sodomy by a Sharia judge in the Islamic northern part of the country. Under Sharia or Islamic law, they could be sentenced to death by stoning, which requires final approval by the state governor. The official government news agency NAN reported that the men were at a hotel dressed in women's clothing and celebrating a gay wedding. But that's the way the government has described similar arrests. More than a dozen men have been sentenced to death for homosexual activity in recent years in the African nation, according to some reports. But no executions have actually taken place because the sentences were reversed on appeal or commuted to prison terms as a result of pressure from human rights groups. The southern half of Nigeria, where convictions for homosexuality carry sentences of up to 14 years behind bars, is predominantly Anglican. Nigerian Archbishop Peter Akinola has led vocal opposition in the Global Communion, a loose affiliation of congregations that originally grew from the Church of England, to the ordination of queer clergy and the blessing of same-gender couples in North America. Conservatives in the U.S. Episcopal wing have aligned themselves with Akinola, further fueling a growing schism within the global Anglican communion.
Meanwhile, a newly elected legislature in Nigeria is reportedly moving ahead with a measure that would virtually deny any civil rights to gays and lesbians and imprison even those who support them. The bill, which started out as a ban on same-gender marriage during the last legislative session, was greatly expanded to make it a crime for more than two gay or lesbian people to even be in the same place at the same time. It prohibits LGBT social or civil rights groups from forming, and it would be illegal to sell or rent property to a same-gender couple. Watching a queer-themed film or video, visiting an LGBT website, or expressing love in a letter to a person of the same gender would also be outlawed. It would also make it a criminal offense to provide information about HIV/AIDS to gay men. Convictions under the sweeping legislation could bring 5 years in prison at hard labor.
A Nicaraguan national who fears persecution in his homeland because of his sexual orientation was ordered deported this week by Canada's Immigration and Refugee Board, a decision his lawyer said came as a huge surprise. 21-year-old Alvaro Orozco says he was just 12 years old when he fled Nicaragua, a country where homosexuality is a crime punishable by up to 4 years in prison, because his father beat him for being gay. He hitchhiked his way to the U.S. and, after 5 years living as an illegal immigrant, eventually crossed into Canada in January 2005. The Immigration Board rejected his original asylum application earlier this year because they didn't believe he's gay. Appeals to the board asked to reopen Orozco's case for a pre-removal risk assessment to evaluate the dangers he faces if he's sent back to Nicaragua, and that Orozco be allowed to stay in Canada on humanitarian and compassionate grounds. The pre-removal risk assessment documented Orozco's involvement and activism in Toronto's queer community, and the fact that he is now even more likely to face persecution because of the international media attention his case has received. The board rejected that bid this week, and Orozco could have already been deported by the time you hear this report. No reasons for the rejection were given. Orozco's lawyer, El Farouk Kaki, told a news conference that this week's decision placed Orozco's safety at risk. There were tangible and very real risks before the Nicaraguan press picked up his story, he said. Those risks were exacerbated because his name and his orientation were broadcast nationally. Of the board hearing, Cockey said that it seemed to me that they had already made a decision that no matter what we did, they were going to remove him. I think the writing on the wall should make us all feel a little insecure about our rights and our dignity as Canadian citizens, as queer people, and as human rights advocates. Cockey said he would continue to do everything in his power to gain asylum for Orozco, but he wasn't optimistic.
But finally, by winning a seat on the Nashville City Council this week, accountant Keith Durbin became the U.S. state of Tennessee's first openly queer elected official. Durbin ran unopposed for the District 18 seat to replace his termed-out predecessor, but was out stumping at his local precinct with his mother on Election Day. He said he'd use his council seat to be a strong voice for neighborhood interests, to emphasize top-quality education for our children, encourage continued economic vitality of our business districts, and to work closely with Vanderbilt University and Belmont University as good neighbors. Durbin lives with his partner, Human Resources Executive Gary Bynum, a fact he mentioned on his website. He told the Tennessean newspaper that, "I'm running for office to represent people, and I want them to know who I am."
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 11th, 2007, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Don Lupo.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
I met a Klondike on the Klondike, and we had a drink or two. We hadn't much in common, hadn't much else to do. So as we passed the time, small talk and cheap wine, I thought it strange that we'd met. As we shared the table, I was able to make a friend I'd never forget. I didn't ask any personal questions, thought it not my place, but I listened to her intently, studied the lines on her face. She was tall and lean, blonde and mean, but I marveled at the things she would say. She didn't know it, and I didn't show it, but that night she stole my heart away. Ticket. That one night long ago, and I wonder where she is now, but I guess I'll never know. Still I often think about her, think about what might have been, and I've never since that night wished so hard. Be a woman again.
From the album Tim Walker Live, that was Klondike. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee. And on the line tonight, for those of you who were living in a cave, you may have missed the fact that last Thursday night was an unprecedented presidential forum on GLBT matters. It was sponsored by Logo Foundation and the Human Rights Campaign. And tonight I've got Christopher Johnson, Director of Public Affairs with the Human Rights Campaign. Christopher, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for being with us tonight. Well, one of the first things is, what is the response from your contacts around the country as to the how it went? So what were the responses?
Well, so far we've gotten an overwhelming great response to it. I think people were really excited that we were able to pull this off with the candidates. The whole forum was designed so that we could get the candidates to kind of move beyond their talking points. And, you know, while they weren't as forthcoming as we would have liked due to time constraints, you know, we did feel that it was a good introduction to the election season. And so far we've got a lot of great response, from around the country, from our members, people that watched it, people have written in, and said that they were really happy that we were able to do it.
Well, I thought it was great. I know that, you know, a week before last, we spoke with Brad Luna, who was the public relations contact on the release, and sort of a pre-show, pre-forum conversation. But now, after it's over with, just a brief comment from myself, I wasn't able to watch it live, but I thought it was wonderful, the archives that they had, that you could just listen to every bit of it, play it over and over again if you miss something. How is there any way of calculating how many people watched it or listened to it?
We don't have specific statistics exactly on how many people watched it. We do know that it was in the tens of thousands of people. And like you said, one of the good things that Logo did was be able to upload segments of the entire debate up to their website at visiblevote08.com. And the good thing what they did was you can also see the candidates talk about issues according to particular topics, as opposed to just seeing whatever the candidates did themselves. So, and plus, the good thing about the debate is that even if you weren't able to watch it, there were tons and tons of news stories out about the forum. You know, it was covered by every single major network, including the cable networks like CNN and Fox and MSNBC, NPR. So a lot of people across the country were able to really tune in and kind of get a gist of what was said during the debate. So, you know, we're looking at it as a really, really outstanding success. And we blogged on our blog at hrcbackstory.org, and Logo also ran a lot of commentary on their website. So, you know, it's a lot of different ways for people to kind of figure out what was going on during the forum.
Now, from the back response from the candidates, how did they feel it came off, and were they comfortable with it and in themselves? I know if there were a few of them that had a few faux pas, something about choice or preference.
Right.
I think there was a minor faux pas there, a major faux pas, actually. How do they feel about it?
Well, of course, you know, I think some of the candidates, I think you're speaking of Governor Richardson.
Yes.
From New Mexico. You know, immediately after he made his comment that he felt that that gays and lesbians choose to be gay and lesbian, you know, he issued a flurry of press releases kind of clarifying his record on GLBT issues. So, you know, there was some damage control there, but in terms of some of the other candidates, I mean, you know, of course, we would have liked to have gotten longer responses from them. It's amazing how fast 15 minutes goes, but when you have six candidates lined up. So, you know, I felt like they all were just getting into their answers before it was time, before time was up. So, so far we've gotten, you know, pretty good responses back from the candidates. They were all happy to be there. And of course, Governor Richardson, you know, he's been out there trying to clarify his views, and, you know, we definitely think that that's a great idea.
Well, one thing, based on the reason for my question about how comfortable they were, is the future. The future possibility of doing this again and in 4 years for sure, and possibly
right.
for other elections. Is that in the works, or can you even talk about that?
Well, you know, I was actually just asking about that today, and I do know that, you know, we're really, really pleased with the way that this one turned out. And, you know, probably the best thing about this entire exercise is that it totally proves the power of the GLBT community in presidential politics. I mean, so we've now staked out territory, and we're not going back. So, you know, we don't have any immediate plans for a forum looking that far ahead, but I can guarantee you that, you know, we're going to be looking at the best ways to keep people informed and involved with the presidential elections. And so this was a great exercise for us. And, you know, we're just so excited to see how we can keep doing things like this in the future.
Oh, that's great. Now, you say keeping people engaged. What are you, anything specific you can share with us tonight?
In terms of for the 08 elections?
Well, yes, we'll for the 08 elections.
Sure. Well, we'll be out there across the country as we kind of get closer towards the primaries and towards the caucuses. You know, actually what we've been doing, one of the issues that we found that's really been getting a lot of national attention is the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, that's been in the media a lot lately. And actually, we've been conducting a nationwide tour with some openly gay and lesbian military veterans that have gone across the country. We're actually going to one of our second-to-last stops in New Hampshire, actually, on Thursday. And so what we're trying to do is just keep the debate going. We're trying to keep the attention, the focus on these national issues. There'll be ways for people at these particular meetings to get involved, sign up for alerts from HRC. So, you know, we, just like we did with the 2006 elections, we're going to really be involved with, you know, making sure that people have a way to become involved.
This is Deborah Bell, and we're talking with Christopher Johnson, Public Affairs Director at the Human Rights Campaign. And speaking of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, there was a recent Newsweek poll that showed that citizens of this country overwhelmingly support gays and lesbians being able to serve in the military.
Right.
How have you felt that? Have you been seeing the reverberations from the statements from the candidates on that? Because it seemed like all of them were in favor of doing away with Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Exactly. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, at the last CNN debates, I mean, there was a very clear distinction between where the Democratic candidates stood and where the GOP candidates stood. All the Democratic candidates, when asked, raised their hand if they supported repealing the policy. And on the other hand, all the GOP candidates, you know, did not raise their hand. So there's obviously a ground
floor support
here. Exactly. Well, you know, but it is an issue that I think, you know, national security issues, homeland security issues are certainly hot topics these days, of course, rightfully so. So, you know, one of the good questions that came up during the forum was, you know, why didn't some of the candidates, specifically Senator Clinton, you know, put forth legislation already to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell? And so that was another great example of, like, a question that, you know, we felt was really good at kind of moving the debate forward besides just talking about, you know, the talking points that we've been kind of putting out there and trying to see where the candidates would actually put some action points.
One question, a little more form over substance, was the format for the forum. I thought that worked quite well. Were the candidates comfortable with it? And how, from the moderator standpoint, how did they feel about it?
Well, I think if you look at the debate, I mean, it was, I felt like, and I feel like they would agree with the statement. It seems like as soon as they got a chance to kind of get into their answers, the time was up. You know, it was a 2-hour forum with 6 candidates, so it seemed like a good amount of time we were putting it together. And that 2 hours actually was extended from an hour into an hour and a half, and then finally the 2 hours. So I felt like the format really worked well. It allowed us to really kind of ask a little more in-depth questions and really try to ask follow-up questions as opposed to just, you know, having people repeating their stump speeches into broken-down sound bites. And so, you know, we really enjoyed that format. You know, we'll be reviewing it, of course, over the next few days, and, you know, we'll be having ongoing discussions about what worked and what didn't about it. But we've gotten nothing but, you know, pretty good feedback about it. You know, that's a good format even for putting people in the hot seat, which I think Governor Richardson experienced firsthand.
Oh, yes.
And Christopher, just the fact that this event took place is so historical, because in the past, some of the candidates barely would even mention the words gay, lesbian,
let alone transgender,
or bisexual. And here was a whole forum, which means that I think they're giving a serious look at the clout of the community's vote. Another poll recently showed that gays and lesbians were voting in higher numbers than the general population. So our vote does have an impact. And that being acknowledged, I think, is part of the reason that a forum like this could take place. Would you review who the panelists were that were asking the questions, and also what you think the highlight of the evening was, and if there was any consensus as far as who came off the best?
Sure, I can take a stab at that. First, to talk about our panelists, there were three panelists and one moderator. The three panelists were Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solomonese. The second panelist was singer Melissa Etheridge, who's also been just a great activist for GLBT issues throughout her career. And the third panelist was Washington Post editorial board writer Jonathan Capehart, who has his own distinguished career in terms of just being a great journalist and also having a really great handle on GLBT issues. And of course, the forum was moderated by Margaret Carlson. I think one of the most interesting parts of the forum was, for me, when John Edwards apologized for using his religion as a way for him to avoid saying, you know, that he wasn't where we wanted him to be on the marriage issue. I think that apology was certainly a great step forward to take. I mean, I don't think people should be hiding behind religion or using it as a crutch to avoid, you know, expressing their views really succinctly and honestly and forthcomingly about where they stand on our issues. And so I thought that was a really good highlight.
Yeah, I'd much rather someone be honest and say, I'm uncomfortable or I'm not yet understanding, than to, you know, just outright deny or to not even be open to discussion.
Right, right. And so I thought that was a really smart move on his part. I think the reaction to that was that people, like you said, were really, I think that they were happy to see that he was coming forth and saying, you know, I have my own personal steps of growth to take on that, but religion is certainly not the way to go in terms of being able to avoid kind of getting into those discussions. So I thought that was a highlight.
From your opinion, who do you think might have won it?
Ooh, well, I think they all had their highlights.
We're going to put you on the spot here. No, yeah, I don't mean to at
well,
all.
It was styled as a forum and not so much as a debate, but
yes,
I think a lot of people have expressed what they think who might have come off better.
What do you think?
My impression of it is that I feel that whoever people were kind of leaning towards before, they tend to support that candidate, you know, even after the forum. I think people kind of go into these types of discussions with their silent favorite, even if they may not be public with it. And so I've gotten a wide variety. I've been reading the blogs and reading emails and from our members. And I can tell you it's all over the board in terms of who won. Some people say Edwards won. Some people say Clinton won. Some people were really happy with Senator Obama's responses. So it's been all over the board. And I just think it's most important is that it's good to kind of see the candidates beyond just one-upping each other in their answers and really trying to get to their own individual perspectives, and I thought that's what we were most successful at.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Anytime.
Christopher Johnson, Director of Public Affairs with HRC, the Human Rights Campaign. We'll invite you back another time, and I really want to appreciate the fact that you're here. Why don't you give us your contact information in case they want to contact HRC or you personally?
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. Again, my name is Christopher Johnson. I'm the Director of Public Affairs at the Human Rights Campaign. I'm also our lead blogger for HRC's blog, which is at hrcbackstory.org. So I can be contacted through the blog, and my direct email address is Christopher scottjohnson@hrc.org. Christopher and Johnson are both spelled the conventional way. So I look forward to hearing from you all, and it's been a pleasure being on the radio show tonight.
Thank you very much. This is Queer
Voices.
You too. This is Queer Voices.
Low, 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 low. If you go down to the woods today, you're in for a big surprise. If you go down to the woods today, you better go in disguise. For every dyke that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the lesbians have their pick.
Happy lesbians.
Every lesbian who's been gold is sure of a treat today. There's lots of marvelous things to eat and wonderful games to play. Beneath the trees where nobody sees, they'll hide and seek as long as they please, 'cause that's the way the lesbians have their picnic.
La 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 la.
If you go down to the woods today, you better not go alone. It's lovely down in the woods today, but safer to stay at home. For every dyke that ever there was will gather there for certain, because today's the day the lesbians have their picnic. Picnic time for lesbians. What fun the lusty lesbians are having, a lovely time today. Watch them run and play. Watch them catch them on a way. Surprise and see their picnic on their holiday.
Today is their special day.
See them gaily gad about and rock. They love to play and shout. They never have any cares. The lesbians
lesbians.
Picnic time for lesbians. What fun the lusty lesbians are having, a lovely time today. Watch them run and play.
Watch them catch them
on a whim. Surprise and see them picnic on their holiday.
Is their special day.
See them gaily gad about and rock. They love to play and shout. They never have any cares. The lesbians are playing at 6 o'clock. Their friends and their lovers will take them home to bed, because they're tired little lesbians.
From 1998, that little piece of fun was called Lesbian Picnic, and the group is Dykapella from the album At the Gates of Heaven. This is Queer Voices.
I do believe that little piece about the lesbian picnics is one of Glenn's favorites.
It is one of his favorites. I've heard it many times in the last 2 years.
But you know what they say, dip me in honey and throw me to the lesbians. Okay.
Is that what I'm doing wrong? I haven't dipped myself in honey?
You are a honey, though.
Oh.
Well, we're having a very political show here tonight on Queer Voices, and Jeff Reed, our political pundit, I like to call him our political beat reporter, is going to be talking to us about a number of the topics that are hot issues of today, number one being the resignation of Karl Rove. What's up with that, Jeff?
Well, whenever Karl Rove does something, I always put my hand on my wallet and make sure it's still there. So I don't necessarily think that resignation is... So officially it is a resignation, to be clear, but I don't know if necessarily that's what's really going on here. There's been a lot of speculation that there's been some pressures internally. I can't imagine a situation where those pressures are coming to bear on Karl Rove and not coming from Karl Rove pushing on someone else, because he probably more than anyone in the Bush administration, except maybe Cheney, seems to wield an enormous amount of power. So my speculative tentative sort of guess as to what might be going on here is this would be a good time for him to exit stage left from the Bush administration to start to do more of the political work that he's really most famous for the coming election. So,
although they've denied that. They've denied that he's involving himself.
Yes, absolutely. That the official line is he's going to go spend more time with his family, to which, of course, the correct response is what? He has a family. But
didn't Karen Hughes do that? And then next thing you know, she was back doing something else?
That's exactly. So Karen Hughes, she really needed to get back to her family in Texas, and then she was called back to the White House to kind of enter into a more high-level advisory role, not so much a day-to-day role. But, Karl Rove can write his own ticket because he has, for whatever you think of him and his politics, he has done an extremely good job of getting people elected to offices that they wanted to get elected to, and the kind of power he has wielded is very valuable to people. So I can't imagine that he is going to be completely off the political market for very long. Mm-hmm. And
But there's still some ongoing controversy about his role in certain things.
Right. Well, so you're referring to his role in, for example, the attorney firing scandal and perhaps the Valerie Plame scandal. The bad news for people who are looking for some sort of karmic retribution from the universe, that's not going to come through the U.S. court system. This battle between the president and Congress is going to be tied up in the courts for probably years, and by the time the courts actually make any sort of ruling that would make any difference to anybody, everybody who is in power now is going to be out of power, and so it's not going to make a huge difference.
Of course, Rove has been known, and there was a book by the title Bush's Brain.
Referring to Karl
Rove. And don't you get this vision of Georgie Boy just kind of running around, wringing his hands, going, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
No, not really, because this is going to show maybe more of my bias than I would like to show, but I think that implies a level of self-awareness that I would not necessarily implicate our president in having. I think he certainly, publicly, he has said that he kind of operates from the gut, and he doesn't seem to be somebody who is terribly introspective.
He obviously isn't using a mind.
about the decisions he makes, and so I think he will continue to make his kind of standard from the gut decisions, and Karl Rove, I think, was essential in maybe guiding that, but I don't know that that's really necessary right now. In part, well, first of all, Karl Rove's primary role is a political one, and any president at this point in their career, their political life is essentially over, because there are no more elections for him to win, right? There's this coming presidential election, but that's obviously not a race that he's really heavily involved in, especially
since... He could run for sheriff of Crawford.
And I bet that's the one election in this country he could win. But it makes more sense, given Karl Rove's skill set and the kind of power that he seems to like to wield, for him to move on from an increasingly powerless and irrelevant White House onto bigger and better things. And I my prediction is look for him in about 6 to 8 months to take a public role in one of the campaigns of one of the major, either the Republican presidential candidates or possibly a role in the Republican senatorial committee, the candidacies for a variety of senators, and trying to manage the politics at the national level for the party is another kind of likely option for him, but I don't think he's going away.
Wouldn't you think it'd be more likely he'd fall into one of the camps of the presidential candidates?
Whoever
the front runner.
Yes, that's more clear.
So he's going to go with the winner, the apparent Republican who in the league, anyway.
That's more with his skill set, although, it to a certain degree, I don't know that many... I mean, he's going to be a little bit toxic. Now, the question is, how toxic is he going to be? If he's running some sort of broad campaign strategies for a variety of campaigns, and he can't be assigned to a given candidate, then they're kind of inoculated against him. He'd just sort of be a generic Republican problem. If he works for a particular candidate, that candidate is going to get tagged as the next Bush, and that's probably going to be a really bad thing to be labeled as. So I think if he works for a presidential campaign, it will have to be a lot more quiet than if he works for some kind of broad party level kind of role. But you know, we'll see. A lot can happen in a few months, and certainly Karl Rove is the master of taking the negatives and making them into positives. So.
Well, speaking, Jeff Reed, with the concerning the GOP side of things, this weekend marked the Iowa straw poll.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, the Iowa straw poll is essentially a bunch of the Republican political operatives and kind of party faithful in Iowa have a little straw poll where the candidates come and kind of meet and greet, press the flesh, schmooze and booze, and try to get them to cast a straw vote in this fake little poll. And it doesn't really mean very much in terms of, you know, the who's and the what fors, other than the winning candidate gets to run around trumpeting that they won the straw poll, and that probably means a little bit of fundraising money for them. And it's a huge fundraiser for the Iowa Republican Party. And so to, you know, play nicey-nice with the Iowa Republican Party in the past, all the candidates have sort of come there to try to kiss the ring a little bit because Iowa is one of the early primaries. I think the interesting thing this time is every major frontrunner except for Mitt Romney stayed out of the poll. And there's some really good reasons for that. I think the primary one being they don't really feel like they necessarily need to participate in a huge fundraiser for the Iowa Republican Party because the primary schedule is changing, and I think Iowa's going to be less relevant than it was before. And also, the Republican Party is not the most popular party in the world right now, and so, you know, maybe just stay home and try to do better with independents than to kiss up to the party faithful. But Mitt Romney was the winner of this. He won with 32% of the vote. I think.
How did they actually take the vote?
So basically, they have a bunch of the party faithful, and they have to be registered Republicans, and I don't know what the regulations are to vote, but then, you
know. They have to pay.
they
have to pay a fee to vote.
You're kidding me.
$24.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
And be
standing
in the party.
Now, this is a great idea, Jennifer. we need to work for this with the gay and lesbian political caucus.
But to be clear about
gay,
this,
bisexual, transgender,
the candidates spent an enormous amount of money here. Mitt Romney spent something like $450 a vote. For the votes that
he
got.
Which he has the money to do that.
Yeah, so that
translates raising
to a million and some dollars. And I think number two was Huckabee, and he won about, I think, 12% of the vote. And, or was number two Brownback?
No,
it was Huckabee. Okay. And he won about 12% of the vote. And he spent something like $50 a vote. So it was eight times more than anybody else spent for Romney.
Well, what I thought was interesting and what came away is that some people dropped out of the race. After the straw poll.
So after the straw, well, I mean, out there in TV land, anybody know who Tommy Thompson is? What's that sound? Oh, yeah, that's Cricket's,
my
Cricket's
cousin's
chirping.
Tommy Thompson, but I don't think it's the same one.
So, I mean, he was one of those candidates who really had no business being in this race in the first place. If he didn't drop out now, he was going to drop out a month from now or 2 months from now or 3 months from now. That, you know, it played as big news because there wasn't much else to say, but. I mean, that it's sort of irrelevant that he dropped out because most people have no idea who he was and that he was even in the race to begin with. Sort of like, you know, we were just talking with HRC here about the GLBT debate, and I thought it was funny that Mike Gravel was there because, you know, he's another one of these guys. It's not a matter of if
he's actually one of the most pro-GLBT people, but he's often, no one expects anything from him.
Well,
from Alaska.
I mean, he hasn't been in an elected position in 20 years, and you know, I mean, it's not really a question. His fundraising is not really being lit on fire, and he's a fringe candidate, exactly. And so, you know, the fact that a fringe candidate got pushed out, maybe,
like Clinton was.
Clinton was never a fringe candidate.
No, never. So how many people altogether do pay that $24 and take part in this vote?
I don't know the number. I think the total of the vote was, it's a couple thousand people, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think Romney got around 1,000 votes, and he was about a third of the vote, so it was around 3,000 total.
Interesting.
What about that Rick Noriega?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. This was a little news item that I just caught on Charles Kuffner's blog, Off the Cuff, and you know, Rick Noriega hasn't announced that he's running for the Senate seat, for John Cornyn's Senate seat, which is coming up, but he's been quietly doing all the right things to start kind of getting into that race. And this major Republican donor, a Hispanic gentleman, I think his name is Villarreal, has decided to not support John Cornyn and has instead publicly stated that he would support Rick Noriega. Now, to be clear, this is a major Republican donor who is defecting from the party in the Senate race because of John Cornyn's position on immigration. And I think this is one of the more interesting political stories in Texas to watch this cycle, because the immigration debate is it's a fine line to walk, because for the, let's say, racist, conservative, disenfranchised, poor white guy in Alabama, he doesn't want any of those damn foreigners coming into our country. But if you're somebody of Hispanic descent who lives in Texas, who's maybe Catholic and tend towards the social conservative side, you're a little more understanding to people who immigrate from, say, Mexico or from, you know, these countries south of the border, because that's kind of your family experience. So, you know, the right hand is doing something that the left hand kind of disagrees with, and I think this is really going to bite the Republican Party in a very strong way. And this is a race where it plausibly could take a seat which was not considered to be really in play, and to make it something that's maybe a little more competitive. And Rick Noriega, our own Rick Noriega from here in Houston, is exactly the kind of candidate who could take advantage of that.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
He was a state representative, and he had to vacate his seat in order to serve his country because he's in the military. And there was a draft Noriega campaign, draft him to run for the Senate. And then I received today an actual email that's Rick Noriega for Texas for U.S. Senate.
Okay, so maybe that's
apparently
news.
It's
there,
but he's pretty
officially
official
in the race,
and
right?
In fact, the website, I think, is, I'm trying to find where it is on here. Rick Noriega Senate,
and you'll find it. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, his military experience and his knowledge of what's going on.
Right. Well, And that's one thing that you glossed over a little bit, but just to revisit it and highlight it really clearly, what a great story. You have a sitting state senator who had to leave his seat so he could go over to the Middle East and fight in this war.
In Afghanistan.
And that is in such stark contrast to most of the politicians right now, particularly the ones who are big on supporting the war. You don't see the major figures who are calling for a big surge in things heading right over there to fight this battle. And so, you know, it's a great story, and it's really going to play extremely well with both people who are sympathetic to the troops because they feel like they're over there and they need to come home because the war is kind of pointless, and those who think that the war is really important and think more people need to go over there and fight it. So it is great crossover appeal. It's a great story, and he's a really, really strong candidate, and he's exactly the kind of person who can take the seat from John Cornyn.
Rick Noriega has been someone in this state house who has stood up not only for in support of GLBT issues, but in support of children issues and educational issues. You know, all along the gambit of progressive ideas, Rick Noriega has been there, but also the kind of man who will stand up and represent his country when called.
And his wife has been recently elected to the city council here in Houston.
Yes,
replacing that other woman.
That doctor.
Do not say the name.
The one that's going to run against Nick Lanson.
Yeah, and Rick is away for 2 weeks because he's on his way even now to Georgia, Fort Benning, to participate in the Army's Infantry Pre-Command course. And it's an honor, and it's a leadership course, and it will better prepare him for the challenges of
ahead of being a senator.
No
matter where his service takes.
The other big political thing this weekend, and Jennifer and I attended, was the rally for Senator Hillary Clinton.
Well, I was out of town, and I would love to hear everything you have to say about that. That sounds extremely
exciting. Everybody that was anybody in politics here in this city happened to be there, as far as I could see, and of course,
certainly certainly on the Democratic Party side.
Yes, Democratic side, of course. That goes without saying.
Paul
in that
Bettencourt
case.
Was there.
Yes, Paul Bettencourt. No, well, I was there. And of course, in full disclosure, I'm president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and I was there representing our community at the rally as president of the caucus. And, you know, it was nice to see everybody. Sue Lovell was there. Sheila Jackson Lee was there. And a number of other
Sheila Jackson Lee is the regional and national co-chair of the Clinton campaign, and she kind of hosted this event.
Yes, she did.
Senator Mario Gallegos, who you know has gone through health problems he was looking really well, and he was there and was acknowledged. Biggest round of applause was for who, Jennifer?
Oh, go ahead.
Anise Parker.
Yes.
When Anise was introduced, it was just...
brought the house down.
Yeah, so, you know, that once again kind of hinges our hopes on having an openly gay candidate running for mayor of the city of Houston.
And, of course, there is an election coming up to re-elect her as city controller.
Right. Well, one thing at a time there. Sue Lovell has endorsed Senator Clinton, so has Anise, and so has Yolanda Jones. Yolanda is... serving on the steering committee. Patrick McIlvain was there. There was a great picture in the paper. Two women that I know from the women's group that meets at the Unitarian Church, in the paper, Sunday's paper, they had a picture in, and it shows some of these people in the background behind the senator. And I did get to shake her hand. But these women, when she reached between them to shake Sue Lovell's hand, they were like, you know, she was right in between these two women. So you can imagine the high that they were on.
Sue Lovell and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, right there. Yeah. But the thing about what she was amazing in the way she spoke and what she said and the messages that she gave about certainly the health care issue.
Yes.
Education, you know, having mandates to support education for children, to support parents and teachers, and have them be funded. Yeah.
For 8 years we've had No Child Left Behind, and all we've done is leave children behind.
Exactly. Unfunded mandate.
It was a good call, Rove line, but in practicality, nothing happened.
Yeah. Getting this country working again and doing what it takes so that we're not outsourcing, we're not sending jobs elsewhere, but building in this country. So that we get this country out of the deficit that we're operating under, which, you know, the previous Clinton that was president did a great job of that. She told this remarkable story of Madeleine Albright, who had told her the story of going over to the Eastern Bloc countries after, you know, 50 years after World War II. And she noticed that just everywhere she went, there were these United States flags. And she thought, well, that's really amazing. That's nice. But then she noticed that all the flags had 48 stars. And so she asked about them. And the people said, well, when we were liberated by the United States, the soldiers gave us these flags. And through whatever regime or whatever, even, you know, the threat of being discovered, they kept these flags as like an heirloom, like a family treasure, and passed them down through the years. And that's why they had 48 stars, because World War II was before Hawaii and Alaska had become states. And she says, but why are you displaying them? And they said, because we love America. We love the values of the country. It's what we want for our country. And so she says, and that's what I want for our country again, to restore our reputation. That it's amazing that we went from that kind of admiration around the world to the state that we're in now, where, you know,
we appear to be the bully.
We often are and have been. So it was a great speech very impressive, and it'll be interesting as we continue to watch this. I'm excited because she is a feminist. She's done incredible work for women and children. I've been reading her autobiography, and I'm like, this is amazing. This woman, what she has done is amazing. And so certainly, I mean, I'm a Democrat, and, you know, I'm not going to make any bones about that. We don't endorse on KPFT, but we can talk about the issues and the things that are important. Where she remains on GLBT issues and the fact that she has not yet understood the need to support same-sex marriage.
I was, and I'm not, you know, I have my own personal opinions as president of the caucus. I try to remain, you know, nonpartisan. But the truth is that I was a bit disappointed in her answers on the logo presidential forum. She was saying the things I wanted to hear, but she was saying them in political ease that made me a bit uncomfortable. I think she could have been a bit more forthcoming and a little more from the heart. But it was very much practiced and right down to the choice of words. And that was
right.
Why I'm a wordsmith myself, and so I listened for the words she used.
Well, we'll have to work on it as we work within the party to make sure that the platform, you know, the candidates have to hear what we want. Jeff Reed, thanks for being with us again on Queer Voices with your political insight.
Well,
and
thanks for having me,
Jeff,
as always.
Jeff will join us next month to whatever's going on then. I mean, this was a pretty newsy
who knows
night. We want to thank all the people that pledged during our recent summer sizzle fun drive.
Thank you so much.
We did meet our goal, and that's very exciting and important. Queer Voices was not was not supported very well.
People out there just didn't open your bank account, your checkbook as much as you should, but we're here. We're part of the whole family of programming here at KPFT, and we'll still be here so you can hear what's worth hearing on KPFT about the GLBT community.
And coming up in our second hour, we'll have the rest of This Way Out and that interview with Christy Claxton, and we'll talk about her upcoming Houston House concert. You are listening to Queer
Voices, KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Tammy Baldwin, the first out lesbian elected to Congress, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Tammy Baldwin was born in 1962 and was raised by her mother and grandparents. She earned degrees from Smith College and the University of Wisconsin. At 30, she was the youngest representative ever elected to the Wisconsin legislature. After a six-year stint, she pulled out a surprise victory in her election to the U.S. House of Representatives and worked on public education, health care reform, environmental protection, and domestic violence legislation. Tammy Baldwin always ran for office as an out lesbian and championed issues affecting the GLBT community. As an HRC director once said, quote, Tammy is a testament to how society has moved toward understanding and acceptance of gay people as full and valued members of our society. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Diana Westbrook.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra. A new This Way Out update is now on our website. For program reviews and behind-the-scenes news, you should check it out at www.thiswayout.org. It wasn't that many U.S. presidential campaigns ago when any association between a candidate and the lesbian, gay, bi, trans communities would have been the kiss of death. But the Human Rights Campaign brought American politics another step into the 21st century on August 9th with an LGBT issues forum featuring all but two of the Democratic contenders for the White House. Senators Joe Biden and Chris Dodd cited scheduling conflicts. Republican candidates were also invited, but each either declined or ignored the challenge. The two-hour event was co-sponsored and televised live by the Logo cable television channel. Bloomberg News commentator Margaret Carlson served as moderator, and each presidential hopeful in turn faced questions from a panel consisting of Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post, lesbian rock icon Melissa Etheridge, and HRC executive director Joe Solmanese. Beginning this week, we'll highlight the responses of all six participants in this historic event and reactions to them. By far, the most post-forum buzz centered around an embarrassing gaffe by New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson. Things didn't start off badly for Richardson, who served in the U.S. Congress and as Energy Secretary and U.N. Ambassador under President Bill Clinton.
Governor Richardson, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post has some questions for you.
Yes, Governor, thank you for being here. In response to a question on same-sex marriage at the CNN YouTube debate, you said you would focus less on marriage and more on what's, quote, achievable in terms of rights and responsibilities for same-sex couples. When will same-sex marriage be achievable, and what will you do to foster an environment where it would become achievable?
Here's my view. The nation, I believe, is on a path to full inclusion. The president must lead that effort. In my judgment, what is achievable is civil unions with full marriage rights, with domestic partnership. I believe that's achievable. What we also need to do is redress some of the gross imbalances of the past. If I'm elected president, I would get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I didn't vote for it when I was in Congress. When you have an America that is asking men and women to fight and die, the last thing you need to do is give them a lecture on sexual orientation. Secondly, I would repeal another horrendous initiative that I voted for and I regret now. DOMA. That would preclude a number of the full partnership rights that I want to see with civil unions. And third, and here's another one that hasn't been focused on today, and that's No Child Left Behind. That has initiatives in it that hurt diversity education. That is achievable. Hate crimes laws are achievable. But we have to bring the country to a position where there is public support.
Mm-hmm. Governor, as a guest on the Don Imus show, Imus in the Morning, in March 2006, you were asked by Imus in a gag on a staffer if that staffer were a, quote, maricón, which, as you know, is Spanish for faggot. In your response, you repeated the epithet, but you've since apologized, and now you question, I've seen you question the timing of this issue coming up. Do you not believe that you should be held responsible, held accountable for using that word, repeating that word?
Sure. You know, and I'm Hispanic. I felt the sting as a kid of being stereotyped, and I apologize, but I meant no harm when I said that. It was, you know, one of those exchanges that I was caught off guard. No, I am not backing off. I apologize. But I think you should look at my actions and not words. Let me tell you what I've done as governor. All of these issues that we've talked about today, Bill Richardson as governor has done. Number one, I passed the Hate Crimes Act that was based on non-discrimination, on partnership, on... I was the first governor to include transgender. Number two, also passed domestic partnerships avoiding discrimination. I pushed that and got it done. I'm the only governor that called a special session to expand domestic partnership. We didn't get it done in the last session in New Mexico. We will get it done in this next one. I've appointed cabinet members that are gay and lesbians. All through my administration, I have been inclusive of the lesbian gay community. So, you know, you can talk about what mistakes people have made. I've made plenty. And I probably said things that I regret across the board. But we should look at what we've done. And as a governor, as a congressman, 15 years on gay issues. I was there.
Thank you, Governor. Melissa?
Thank you. Do you think homosexuality is a choice or is it biological?
It's a choice. It's...
I don't know if you understand the question. Do you think a homosexual is born that way, or do you think that around seventh grade we go, oh, I want to be gay?
You know, I'm not a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see this as an issue of science or definition. I see gays and lesbians as people, as a matter of human decency. I see it as a matter of love and companionship and people loving each other. You know, I don't like to categorize people. I don't like to, like, answer definitions like that, you know, perhaps are grounded in science or something else that I don't understand.
Well, it's hard when you are a citizen of a country that tells you that you are making a choice when you're born that way, and your creator made you that way, and there's a document that was written 200 years ago that says you are entitled to certain rights that you are not given. How can there be anything other than absolute equal rights for homosexuals?
Well, that's always been my view. As I said, as a Hispanic, I grew up with people thinking because of my darker skin and my, I wasn't fully speaking English at a time that I was not equal. So I understand that issue of inequality. And so across the board, I've always felt that every human being deserves the same rights. The issue is, how can we bring this country together to achieve the goals of full equality? And the best barometer of that is your record, not your speeches. The best barometer of that is who is delivering, not your 10-point plans. And with that closing, I ask for the support of the many people here that support in this country full equality.
Thank you, Governor.
Richardson's apparent contention that homosexuality is a choice shocked many in the audience as he nervously looked down and away from the panel. The video cameras hadn't even cooled down before his campaign issued a statement saying that the governor does not believe, quoting here, that sexual orientation or gender identity happened by choice. Speaking the following day with Michelangelo Signorilli on Sirius Satellite Radio's OutQ channel, Richardson further clarified that he had misunderstood the question, thinking it was about politicizing science. And he added, "I always loved the word choice." The next Democratic presidential candidate we'll hear from is former U.S. Senator Mike Gravel. Starting his political career in the Alaska Statehouse in 1963, the maverick Senator Gravel gained fame during the Vietnam War by inserting documents that disputed the reasons for the conflict into the congressional record. As a lower-tier contender for his party's nomination, Gravel had not been on the forum's original guest list until LGBT Democratic activists insisted that he be included.
Senator Gravel, thanks for joining us.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Well, we're delighted. Melissa is going to begin our questioning.
Great. Hello. I'm so grateful that you are here. You are unusual.
Well, I've heard that said.
Yes. You are unusual for your generation of straight white men. But you actually...
Well,
you,
Melissa.
So you actually support same-sex marriage. How do you speak to men of your generation, and how do you speak to your generation in general about your issues to convince them?
My generation? Most of them are wrong.
Yeah.
They're wrong. When I was a kid, there's a lot of homophobia around. I can recall when the gay issue was, 55% opposed, 40% for, and lo and behold, now if you're talking about the gay issue in general, it's probably 55, almost 59% for, and the rest are in the dustbin of history. The same thing's going to happen with the marriage issue. I'll tell you, I'll make you a promise. 5 years from now, the marriage issue will be a non-issue in the next presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. Just that simple. We had the leadership that demagogues the issue to a fare-thee-well, whether it's presidential candidates who can't quite get their arms around the marriage issue, and of course we'll give you an argument, and it could be a real argument that it's their morality that doesn't permit it, or it's a political argument. And it's sort of ironic that we see the gay community supporting people like Hillary, Obama, Edwards, who for some reason can't get their arms around marriage. Stop and think, what is marriage? And I resent religion saying that it's a religious term. It's not. Marriage preceded all forms of religion in civilization. Marriage is a commitment between two human beings in love. And understand me, I'm saying two human beings. They can be heterosexual, they can be two lesbians, they can be transgender, they can be two gays. What it is, it's a commitment of human beings in love, and if there's anything we need in this world, it's more love. In fact, if you look a little deeper, and you look at life itself, into the human psyche, there's only two divisions. There's love and fear. And love implements a whole beneficial area of our psyche. And fear, which of course is what we've been living under for the last 50 years in order to sustain the military complex. Stop and think. We're afraid of everything in the United States. There's nothing to fear. There's nothing at all. And as president, I will call upon the courage in the people to step forward and express themselves with what counts, and that's love.
Thank you, Senator. Jonathan.
Senator, just a second ago you said you couldn't understand why people were supporting Obama and Edwards and Clinton over you. So why do you think, because you are in support of full same-sex marriage rights, so why do you think Obama and Edwards and Clinton are ahead of you?
Well, it's because they're playing it safe. They're playing it safe. They're not going to lose any votes over not being for marriage, whatever their excuses are. They're going to win. This is costing votes for us. I don't care. I don't want those votes. I don't want those votes. So you want to know the difference? It's as plain as the nose on your face, and that is that what you're experiencing is politics as usual. And a gifted politician can tell you this, and I don't mean this humorously, I mean it very accurately. A good politician can tell you to go to hell and make you look forward to the trip.
Well,
and we see a lot. We see a lot of that. Let me say, I have worked all of my adult life on this issue and the issue of justice. For me, it's justice, it's human rights. It's not whether you're gay. I've advocated many times that for gays, come out of the closet, please. Some people can't pay the price at a given point in time, but there's one thing that counts. You've got to assert your rights. Nobody is going to give you anything from on high. It just does not happen that way in a system of representative government. And so you have to step forward, and I'll be happy to step forward with you as I have all of my life. And I can promise you one thing. You stand up for me, and I need your support. I need your support and want it and beg it, because I'll do more for your cause than any other human being that walks the earth as your president. Thank you very much.
Senator Gravel also spoke about his longtime record in favor of LGBT equality and medical marijuana. He said that his and fellow contender Congressman Dennis Kucinich's support for full marriage equality has moved the ball along on the issue. In the next 2 weeks, you'll hear more from the Human Rights Campaign, Logo Television Channel's historic presidential candidate forum. Still to come, Senators Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, former Senator John Edwards, and Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Christopher Gall, Don Lupo, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Diana Westbrook contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime and exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are supported by direct tax-deductible donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air. We'll thank you with your choice of some very special programming CDs. You can also subscribe to CDs or cassettes of our weekly programs there. To request a CD or cassette copy of this week's program, or sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our occasional This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Radio Veronica, West Point, Pennsylvania, KUNR, Reno, Nevada, 2BAY, Byron Bay, New South Wales, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Laughing in my head and dancing in my dreams. Best love girls like a fox on the hunt. She do everybody wants, but she ever back on a no. Not by you. Maybe. Not by me. She's the one to choose. Decide what she'll be. But oh. Michelle loves him with a smile and kills him with a touch. Best love girl won't tell you no. Will she ever say yes? Will she ever beg? I don't know. Not by you. Maybe. Not by me. She's the one to choose. Decide what she'll be. But oh.
the album Out of Nowhere. That was Christy Claxton, who is up next. This is Queer Voices.
Hi, Christy.
You know what, Deb?
What?
Listening to Best Love Girl through the telephone makes me want to go out and buy a transistor radio because it sounds about the same. Kind of squished and mushy, you know.
Well, kinda. Christy Claxton is one of my Best Love Girls, and let me just give her a little introduction here. She's no stranger to Queer Voices. We've had her on before, and she's also was the first of the divas to perform in the Diva House concerts, which I am one of the promoters of. And she, if you've ever sat on Christy's porch in Fayette County, you can attest to the peace that exists there. Christy Claxton is a gifted singer, songwriter, and promoter, and a person who believes in doing good work in the world. Without a doubt, one of the nicest people you will ever meet. She also knows how to share her love of music, having done so with her Bear Creek concerts and collaborating with other artists to produce two Peace from the Porch CDs that benefited worthy causes. Christy was our first artist in the Diva House concert, and she will be joining us again on August 18th. She is an intricate part of our continuing efforts to support women artists. So welcome again to Queer Voices, Christy.
Well, it's great to be back on the air with you guys. I always enjoy it. I always enjoy either coming into the studio. I guess this is the first time I've actually called in.
Yeah, we miss you not being here.
I know, you know, because I had to lock the dog out because I knew as soon as I got on the phone, he'd start yipping, you know. Chased him out with my telephone.
Yeah. How's the hot tub?
We were going to use them last night. We were going to do it, and we were so tired. This is sort of ironic, but I want to take this, you know, just a minute here to reach out to JD and tell him that I love him.
Right.
But Saturday night, as Deb, as you know, and I think many people know, I work for Hospice Brazos Valley, which is a nonprofit hospice out here in the country. And we had a staff party, and it wore my partner and I out to host that many people. And we thought we'd just get in those bathtubs. And you know what? We were too tired to even put water in them.
It was a good party.
It was a great party. We had Yashid out here. They're part of the Bear Creek Ensemble. They back Ruthie Foster and Patrice Pike and Etika for the recording of Little Red Recorder. So they came out and played, and we had a great time. But it still doesn't take away from the fact that it wore me out.
Well, you know, a lot of the things you do, you know, it's a good tired, though, huh?
It is a good tired. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that you don't complain about being tired about something like that with folks that go out at any hour of the night and are always there for people. You know, they know the definition of tired, so...
Well,
I'm not complaining.
Tell me a little bit more about the hospice and the people you serve there and what you're doing, because you're actually restoring a building.
We are. We are a nonprofit hospice. We're the largest rural hospice in Texas, and we're part of a nonprofit alliance in Texas that includes Hospice Houston. They're, in fact, Hospice Brazos Valley, Hospice Austin, and Hospice Houston started this nonprofit alliance back when Margaret Caddy was still the director of Hospice Houston. So our home office is in Bryan College Station, and we are opening our third site office in LaGrange. We have a real need for hospice care out here in this very, very rural area, so a local philanthropist donated a building to us. And it's a great gift, but I have to say at this point in the restoration of the building, we were given a roof and a good foundation, and everything in between is being restored. So I'm the manager of branch support for the LaGrange office, and we are... Hopefully we'll have that office open around September the 10th and be serving the rural population out here.
Mm-hmm. And what are the needs of the people that need hospice care there?
Well, you know, hospice care is, as far as what hospice provides, that's universal. And that's going to be supporting the patient and the family and the caregivers. through medical support, through nurses, of course, then psychosocial and spiritual support through social workers and non-denominational or non, I guess you could say, any, you know, wherever they're religious or non-religious, but their spiritual needs are a chaplain, care aides who come in and help with personal care with the patient. Volunteers are a very intricate part of hospice because when it actually the concept came to the United States, it was 100% a volunteer movement. And bereavement care, our hospice, actually, we, the Texas New Mexico Hospice Alliance Bereavement Coordinator of the Year is actually my bereavement coordinator that will be working with me here. She's phenomenal. We adapt and adjust our bereavement needs to our population, whether it be young men who may have lost a wife and they still have children at home, you know, that 50-something person, or loss of a child. We really just try to watch what people are going to need and who they are and get those like people together so they can support one another and we can support them. That's really our hallmark, is bereavement care.
Mm-hmm.
But out here, one of the most difficult things is the distance. We probably spend $250,000 a year in gasoline alone just getting to our patients because the distance that our... We have 9,000 square miles. You get the picture.
Right.
So it's very difficult to do rural hospice. Most corporate hospices who try to do rural hospice will last about a year. They realize how expensive it is, and they leave. The MD Anderson... social workers and discharge planners have told me you are consistently the only hospice out there in those rural areas that we can count on. We know you're going to be there.
Wow,
so we have,
amazing.
You know, we have a big mission, and we work very hard to fill it.
Well, at one time, Christy Claxton had this dream of being a full-time musician. And she pretty much just achieved that dream, but then things kind of changed.
Oh, they did. It's called a mortgage payment.
That was the influence.
That's it.
But the work that you do, not just with hospice, but you've taken your gifts as a musician, and you've built a network of people. You're very supportive of other artists, and then you've done these. You did a stage at the International Festival here in Houston. You've done these two Peace from the Porch. And believe me, I've sat on Christie's porch and just felt so at peace with the five dogs in the yard and hearing the crickets and the frogs and just thinking.
It sounds like a song.
It really, she gives you this direction, and she says, you go down this gravel road, and I told her that sounded like a beginning of a song. Just go down this gravel road.
Yeah.
But the sense of peace that you can just sit there and be. But
I haven't known that since I was a child.
Yeah, it's a special thing. And Christy has, she, it's kind of her sign out, you know, peace from the porch.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really get it if you've ever sat on that porch. But these two CDs, the first one benefited the American Cancer Society.
Right.
And the second one went to programs to help families who have been affected by violence.
And, you know, an interesting note on Peace from the Porch Volume 2, the Houston Women's Center has been the largest recipient of funds from Peace from the Porch Volume 2 because the deal was the money stays in the community where those CDs are purchased, and Houston has been by far the strongest supporter of the Peace from the Porch project, so we've been able to put thousands of dollars back to Houston and domestic violence issues.
And
so thank you, Houston.
And unfortunately, Christy herself does not perform on these CDs. It's kind of a strange thing, but she gets together these wonderful artists and lets them bring their gift to the project. And so some of the folks, mention some of the folks who have contributed to the Peace from the Porch.
Well, most recently, I'll tell you the one that has is part of our community and has been a part of this project since the first one is Erika Luckett.
Mm.
She's always been, you know, so quick to be involved. The first person with Volume 2 to pitch in and say, I'll be there, was Martine Locke. And not only did she donate music, she rolled up her sleeves and did the grunt work and the heavy work and helped with the concerts and, you know, moved equipment, did roadie work and everything. And she just really has turned out to be such a wonderful friend because I think she understands and she's like me. You live your values. That's what you do.
She does.
You live your values.
Yeah, absolutely.
Julie Lloyd, who I know is a big JD, is a big favorite for JD. She has been involved and she'll actually be coming back to the porch in October.
Mm-hmm.
October 27th, she'll be on the porch with the Bear Creek concert. Trett Fury was involved, Wishing Chair, Levi Christ, there again, JD suggested, I didn't even know who he was, and he said, I have the perfect song for your CD. Not only does it deal with domestic violence, it deals with gay domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So I emailed Levi and said, you don't know me, but J.D. Doyle said I needed to get in touch with you, and he said, absolutely, absolutely, I want to be involved. So it, over the years, we've had, I've always had good luck getting folks to want to participate and want to donate music to it. And as musicians, it's, you know, I joke and say I quit doing it because of the mortgage, but truly, it's so important we support these people because they really do it on a shoestring.
Well, this altruistic nature that you have, I think you contributed in part to the fact that you were born on Christmas Day.
Oh, I hope not. I'm hoping that the fact that I was born on Christmas Day, that makes me a Capricorn, is why I'm no longer a working musician, because I'm that way about my money.
Mm. Oh, okay.
But, you know, I think more than that, there's a spirituality to what I do, but I used to host a discussion group with the six intellectuals who live in Fayette County. There may be six of us.
Seven now, six.
My girlfriend's here. But we would talk about the definition of suffering. What is it, you know, what is your definition of suffering? What in suffering has a different definition for all of us. But there are basic things that have to happen or you cannot get out of any form of suffering. You cannot be who you really are. And one of those is hunger.
Mm.
The other is pain. And of course, you know, with cancer, pain is prevalent in all cancers. And then violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are things that your neighbors live with. And I've always said that there's nothing I can do to stop the war in Iraq other than cast my vote and maybe have my voice counted in a march or something. But there's just, it can feel very helpless when you want to change the world and you can't. And people focus on these big polarizing, politicizing things that, you know, polarize a country that there may be a conservative right-wing Republican over there that agrees that we need to take care of people in our own neighborhood, the people next door. We need to make sure that people are not suffering. And that was the idea of the Peace on the Porch Project, is all walks of life can sit in my front yard, can sit out here and be a part of this music, and all that politics goes away. We have a common goal, and that is to bring peace to the people next door. And I really believe if people thought that way and said, just bring peace to my neighbor, just think how that, if we did that, how that would go down the line, and then, yes, we could affect the big thing.
Well, there's that slogan that, let there be peace and let it begin with me.
Absolutely.
So,
it sounds cliché-ish, but it is very
true. Yeah, but it's
so true.
If you think on it,
yeah.
and this idea of let me take that one step further and take it to my neighbor, then, you know, hopefully it's one of those things that, you know, it might just be one of those ideas that'll catch on, Christy.
Well, you know, I hope so. It eats my lunch every time I do one of these things. But at the same time, I was listening to a Yasheed CD, and they were backing a spoken word piece by a poet there in Houston called Black Poet, and one of his lines said, I've never seen a Wells Fargo truck following a hearse.
Ooh.
That's right.
That's right.
So, you know, our wealth and our legacy is not about the money we leave behind or the things we leave behind. People remember the things you do.
Right.
And if your ego needs that, they remember the things you do. But even if they don't know who you are, there are people who have made great effect in this world, and people have no idea that they did it. They don't know who they are because it's about that mission. It's about the mission of bringing that form of peace or to eliminate suffering.
I'd rather the things I did be remembered than me be remembered for doing them.
Absolutely. So if peace from the porch, I think it's pretty well caught on. It's a tag that people know. So it's there. It's always going to be. And probably number three will address literacy issues. And
very important.
What's the timeline on three?
Oh, I don't know. Sooner than I want it to be, and I'll tell you why. September 15th, we bring the bear out of hibernation and Bear Creek Concerts come back full time.
What Bear Creek Concerts are.
That's the house concert from the porch. Folks come out to, I live off of Bear Creek Road, and started a concert series with my former partner about 7 years ago. We called it Bear Creek Concerts. It was a house concert. The musicians played off of the porch, and there the salutation, peace from the porch, came from.
Right.
And that's when I began to see, you know, these are all walks of life sitting out here. There are people here that I absolutely have no political agreement with, but I like these people, and some of them became very good friends because we appreciated us for who we are as people, not, you know, how we cast our vote. And that's how, really, the Peace from the Porch Project came into being. In fact, the Bear Creek Concert patronage paid for the Hospice Brazos Valley Party.
Wow.
That's
they
wonderful.
Donated the money for the band, the food, and everything. It didn't cost our agency anything.
That is
so
wonderful.
These are generous people who really put it all aside and put it right back on the porch, so to speak. So Bear Creek Concerts went for years, and then, you know, we kind of threw it into hibernation, and Lane and I opened the Bugle Boy, and I, with Volume 2, I stepped out of that and just focused on Hospice and Peace from the Porch Volume 2.
Right.
So Volume 3, I thought, the way I do these things is I pay for them, I give 100% back to the causes, and then I spend a few years trying to pay myself back.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is part of this concert. It's like, okay, it's time to start thinking about how I'm going to pay myself back and stage Volume 3.
Right, and this concert is the Diva House Concert Saturday night, August the 18th. It's in the Near Heights area off of Ella Boulevard. There's a potluck dinner that starts at 6, or you can come just for the music starting at 7:30. There's a nominal fee, and there's limited seating, but their hamburgers are going to be served, and so people can bring sides for that. And you just get to spend an evening hanging out with some really nice folks and getting to hear some really great
music. Sounds wonderful. Absolutely.
Yes. And Jimmy, you need to come.
That's right. You can find out more at www.christyclaxton.com. And also about the Bear Creek Concerts, www.bearcreekconcerts.com.
Yeah, we're really going to kick it off on September 25th. We're bringing back Garrison Starr and Alice Peacock, and it's going to be a big, big, beautiful show. Those are some beautiful voices.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a really... I don't even know how to describe it, to the experience of having live music in an intimate setting. And of course, you built the house with the idea of being able to hold these concerts and have
right.
that porch as a stage. And so it's a great time. There's people that they would not miss a one. And unfortunately, I've never made it out there for one, but I hope to in the near future. And it's out there in Fayette County. It's a pleasant drive. And so we really want to continue to support Christy Claxton and her work there. And one of the ways that you can do that is by attending the Diva House concert. If you want to find out more information about that. Is that on your website, Christy?
It is on my website.
Okay.
At ChristyClaxton.com, and there's a link to the calendar, and it's there with the address. And, of course, if people, it, probably it's easiest, it's just space is limited, so just email me, and you know what I've been doing. I forward them to you, Deb.
Okay.
So that we can have a good, accurate head count of how many people to expect, because you know this is someone who's not done this before, and you guys managed to convince her to do it, so,
and she's really excited about it, and I think we have about 9 seats left, actually, so
okay.
People do want to make sure that you know, you heard earlier Christy's Best Love Girl. Tell us a little bit about your former incarnations.
Well,
you started off with the Watsons.
Years. Since I was in, actually before that, when I was in graduate school.
Oh, you were a baby then.
Well, I was not, I'm not as much of a baby as you think I am. I just have retained my youthful look, except for the gray hair. But I've been assured that that's okay.
But when you were with the Watsons, you were a baby. No.
I was in my 30s.
Really?
Yeah. So I started playing music in graduate school with Stacy Leader, who was also in the Watsons, and she's always my sidekick with Peace from the Porch stuff. We had a duo in the early 90s at Texas A&M University, and let me tell you what, the queers came out of the woodwork for our Tuesday night show. I mean, 400 and 500 students.
Wow.
It was really great. I mean, it was probably the first time that ever happened at Texas A&M University, and then it, you know, it all just went back away, and it's a scary place again. But, you know, we started there, and then when I moved to Austin, Stacy eventually got to Austin. We thought we would start songwriting just for the heck of it, and then the Watsons grew out of that, which was a folk rock group in Austin. And then when that band broke up, I just kind of kept going on my own and did Out of Nowhere and thought, you know, at that point, I think I was 35 years old, and I thought, I spent my whole life trying to please other people. I'm just going to go do this because I can. And I gave it a couple of years, and it was great. I met great people. That's how I met many of the people who perform in at Bear Creek and then participate in the Peace from the Porch projects. And then 9/11 happened, and we were all starving to death, but I seemed to be the only one with a mortgage. So... anyway, I had to make that decision that music had to go back to being a hobby. And I was also finding that I really loved being a concert presenter and, you know, really actually having the avenue to really reach out and do something good for the world around me. And the more I do that, it seems like the less I play, and if it weren't for the divas, I probably would never play. So,
well, we're glad that you.
We're glad that you're doing it.
Yeah, that you haven't given up.
I miss my late nights on, you know, after playing in the clubs in Houston and banging on the window and coming over there and bugging Jimmy and those guys. I miss that.
Absolutely.
And my straight sidekick, he loved it. I don't know if you remember this, but Needham and I came up there one night after, I don't know where someplace we played. It was in the wee hours of the morning. And I don't remember, but I know that one of the guests or one of the folks in the studio was transgendered and was flirting with Brett. And he was eating it up.
Was that you, Jennifer?
I don't think so.
This woman was just, just eating it up. And then we got out, and I said, hey, Brett. And I just thought, you know, I didn't know how he'd react. I mean, I should have known. But I said, hey, Brett, that woman, you know, she's transgendered. And he got really quiet, and he said, really? I said, yes. He said, that is so cool. I've never been hit on by somebody who's transgender.
Well, bringing back. I'll do a number on him.
I know you will.
He'd probably take Jennifer right up on it, too, because she's quite a
looker. She looks like Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, I mean, she does have that look. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I can see it.
Bless you.
You just became her new best friend.
You are my new best friend.
Yeah.
It was enough just telling that little brief story about how it is on the porch there. It's been a long time. Since those days when I was a child sitting on my grandparents' front porch.
Yeah.
And what do you call yourself now? An armchair musician? Yeah.
I guess. You know, I do, you know, I turn a lot of things down.
just because I might not be in the place to do it. But when Martine was here the last time, several people requested that I get up and play some songs, and I refused to do it because it was Martine's show.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally just said to Donna and Diane, I said, you know what? Book a house concert. I'll come and do a house concert for you guys.
Mm.
So that's really how this kind of came to be.
I see.
Yeah, and you know, Diane wasn't going to let me get away with that and not do it, so.
Yeah. Christy, this is Glenn.
Hi,
Send
Glenn.
Us some more music.
Send you some more music?
Yeah.
Well, I think...
Send JD some music.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think he's got all the music, just unfortunately he's not been with us for a few
yeah.
weeks, and of course he will on the fourth Monday of each month, Queer Music Heritage, but... I grabbed a Watson's album, and then we had Best Love Girl on hand. So,
well, I think both of the pieces from the Porch CDs are there. If they're not, I'll have them.
Oh yeah, I have them. I just didn't get to bring them.
And one of the songs on Volume One, it's toward the end of the CD. There is a place. I wrote that when I was actually in graduate school. And that particular Bear Creek Ensemble is actually me. And Stacy,
mm-hmm.
leader, and then some other musicians. Brett Needham, of course, who played with me in the band Dirty Blondes for years and years. That's actually a different ensemble. So each ensemble is a different group of musicians. The name doesn't change, so I'm doing the lead vocals on that particular song, on Peace from the Porch, Volume 1. And then, of course, the dance remix on Volume 2 was almost kind of a... It was sort of a joke. It probably came out of coming out up to the radio station late at night. And I said I was going to do it. And Jimmy Carper looked at me like, that's going to sound awful. This countrified song, 70s rock, and you're going to make a dance song out of it? I said, yeah. So I took it to Mark Hallman, who does all the production for me on anything I record, and I said, they think you can't do it because you're an old man, and it insulted him. He said, you watch me. So, you know, we did this dance remix, and I took it back up to the guys, and it was like, I guess in 2002,
you made
the song of the year.
Yeah.
For KPFT, for the After Hours show. So it was sort of a hoot because nobody believed that it could be done. So we did it. So I had to put it. It was sort of just, I put it there for people like Jimmy and JD, and because it's never been on a CD, and it's always sort of been this tongue-in-cheek little joke. So it was fun, you know, to do a dance remix and put it on Volume 2.
Well, Christy Claxton, thanks again for being with us on Queer Voices. If you would like to see Christy Claxton in person and hear some of her music.
Absolutely.
At Diva House Concert on Saturday, August 18th, you can find out more information at www.christyclaxton.com. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Because I haven't a clue. don't want change, that's not what I'm about. But part of my future waits upon your move. When you look at me, you see false commitments. But I don't believe in delays. So baby, don't lie to me to save my feelings. That'll just put our friendship under a if you let me go. Your indecision is killing me. Sometimes I think you hear me. I know nobody gave you a map, but still it's time to find a road. If you let me go, but your indecision is killing me. Sometimes I think you hear me. I know nobody gave you a map, but baby, just love me or leave me, or at least let me know. My life won't be over if you let me go, but your indecision is killing me. Sometimes I think you abuse me. I know nobody gave you a map, but still it's time to find a road. Before you hurt me or anyone else, like yourself, you've got to find a road.
To the bottom of the bunk bed that I'm lying under, laying low, looking up through the wood slats, counting lightning distance by the thunder. Tonight we'll be driving across the city. We've been sleeping on the other side. Lots of hairspray in our hair to look pretty. The station keeps us alive. Now I don't know where I'm going. I barely know where I've been. All I know is I'm still looking at the other man. Conditioner working overtime, trying to keep us all cool. Well, I seem to remember passing a warning sign back when Alan Hammer was a perfect tool. Tonight we'll drive to the radio station, negotiate the angles of our guitars. It's a chance to sing to the station, use our wings and get out of these cars. Now I don't. I barely know where I've been. All I know is I'm still looking for
that is is Sonia and Disappear Fear from a live album, and the song was called The Other Man. And before that, from an album called The Watsons, I Feel Better, the song I Find a Road. And this is Queer Voices.
And, of course, Christy Claxton was one of the Watsons, and we appreciate her being with us on Queer Voices tonight.
Yeah, say something about J.D.
We have had a loss from our Queer Voices family. J.D. lost his significant other this past week, and we love them both very much, and we share with J.D. deep sorrow at his loss, and just love him so much, and we just spent out special thoughts to him, and thank him for being part of this show
and part of our family.
That's right.
JD, our heart goes out to you.
It does. And thank all of you for listening and for supporting KPFT.
So I want to quickly thank Christopher Johnson, Director of Public Affairs with the Human Rights Campaign, for being on the show, as well as Jeff Reed, our political pundit, for talking with us, as well as, of course, Christy Claxton. And don't forget about the Diva House concerts this Saturday.
Thanks for listening to
Thank
Queer
you.
Voices.
This is Jennifer Renee.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Come and join Museum District Day on Saturday, August 18th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. 14 museums will offer free general admission for you to enjoy fascinating exhibitions, hands-on activities, and performances throughout the day. Take Metro Rail to the district or drive and park right inside. Then board a free shuttle to visit and enjoy each museum. For more information, call 713-715-1939 or visit online HoustonMuseumDistrict.org. Museum District Day is brought to you by 14 participating museums, Channel 11, Texas Monthly, the Houston Chronicle, and commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
This year, the Pacifica Foundation, the parent organization of this station, is holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's five signal areas. These local station boards help shape the direction of this station. Your vote makes a difference. Please note the date of record that closes eligibility for voting is coming up Friday, August 31st. The date of record is the time when new members must be on the rolls for this election.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.